Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, everyone, to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. Stefanos Tsitsipas is three-time Monte Carlo champion. He beats Casper Ruud in the final 6-1, 6-4, and we are going to break it down. What a shift. What a turnaround. Tsitsipas wasted no time after stepping foot on the clay, making an immediate statement. And look, coming in from just an expectation standpoint, you're well aware that Tsitsipas is a better player on clay than he is everywhere else. You're well aware that Monte Carlo, historically, is his best big tournament. But it was still hard to completely put faith in something like this happening because there just wasn't a lot of signs that big wins over top players was going to be something coming around the corner. He came into the week 25th in the race, having lost six of his last seven matches against top 20 players, having not beaten a top five player since 2022. He beat two top five guys this week, and he dominated a top 10 player in the final. Now, on the other hand, maybe we should have seen it coming. Regardless of how bad things looked in a 6-2, 6-4 loss to Denis Shapovalov in Miami, or a loss via the same scoreline to Jiří Lehečka at Indian Wells. Because he's done this before, maybe to a less extreme level, but here's a guy who's never made a semifinal at Indian Wells or Miami, and now he's won Monte Carlo three times. He's got a 21-3 record at the Monte Carlo Country Club, 88% win percentage. Has one tournament ever meant so much to a player resume-wise? At least a player of Tsitsipas' level and his caliber. And I'm not talking about a player who, you know, wins their only title somewhere. And yeah, like maybe that means more to that individual player because now they have one career title instead of zero. I'm saying in terms of really good top players who actually win quite a bit. They're going to win a lot over their career. Think about narratively and reputationally how much Monte Carlo shifts, just changes and alters the conversation about Tsitsipas. Now, he has the year-end championship title, first time he played the event in 2018. But it doesn't matter. If he didn't have a Masters 1000 title, if he didn't win three Monte Carlos, the narrative around Tsitsipas would be that of someone who can't win big tournaments, who doesn't win big finals, right? Instead, it's not the case at all. It's a guy with three Masters 1000 titles, which is solid. You know, you have the context that it's all in the same place, but it's really, really solid. I do want to give a little bit of a preview of what's to come in this analysis. We're going to talk about how Tsitsipas saved 8 of 8 break points in this final. We'll compare the backhands. We'll compare the forehands. I'll talk about a tactical mentality, a pattern that Tsitsipas used over and over to great effect. I will give you my take on Casper Ruud's record in finals above the 250 level. He's 0-7. And I will end by talking about the controversial Jannik Sinner Stefanos Tsitsipas semifinal, 3-set win for Steph, the line call and the chair umpire decision in the first game of the third set. I have a big point to make about umpiring and tennis and all of that. So that's what's to come, but we're going to start by talking about the unconventional way in which Stefanos Tsitsipas managed to hold his serve throughout this straight set win. In the final against Ruud, Tsitsipas served, if I were to grade it out of 10, I'd give him a 2. So he had a 2 out of 10 serving performance and still won in straight sets. That's how much better he was than Casper in every other area. I found Casper Ruud's performance to be disappointing. And it's going to be harsh, and it stinks to talk about Casper on this show as negatively as I'm going to have to, because he had a great win in the semifinal and he beat Novak Djokovic. But this is how Monday Match Analysis is. We focus on the final. And as far as the final is concerned, I think Casper Ruud should be pissed off. I do. I think he should be pissed off because he fancies himself, he backs himself as a player who's going to win from the baseline, who's going to return serve at a high level, who's going to break serve. And he goes up against Stefanos Tsitsipas, who did not have his serve. And Steph beat him with his second serve over and over and over and over again. That should be extremely frustrating to Casper Ruud. The fact that Tsitsipas made 48% of his first serves. And even when he made his first serves, he only won 60%. But on the second serve, which Tsitsipas was, you know, kicking, he's not John Isner. He's not even Ben Shelton. He has a good quality second serve. Don't get me wrong. Very good second serve. But not a second serve that should be as effective as anybody's first serve against Ruud on Monte Carlo clay. And that's what this was. Tsitsipas won 26 of 38 second serve points. That is 68%. Look at total points won on serve for Tsitsipas. He won 21 points with his first serve. He won 26 points with his second serve. That's what I mean when I say that Ruud lost to a second serve and that Tsitsipas won with his. So that's where we should start. Let's start with the second serve success of Stefanos Tsitsipas. And first, I do want to point out one thing that Steph did exceptionally well, and then we'll get to where Ruud fell short. He did not subscribe to the idea that every second serve should go into the Casper Ruud backhand. In fact, he mixed it up very evenly. He distributed his second serves pretty evenly, backhand, forehand. Now, on the ad side, rightly so, heavier to the backhand, especially on big points. And in general, a little bit heavier on the backhand. But more than enough serves to the Casper Ruud forehand, where Casper could not prematurely anticipate that the serve was going to come to his backhand side. And remember, with Casper, he's going to stand deep on the second serve return. Standing deep allows him time, theoretically, to run around and hit a big, heavy forehand return. If Tsitsipas was kicking it to Ruud's backhand over and over and over again, as many players do, Ruud would have picked his spots, and likely on every big point, he would have simply started moving left as soon as Tsitsipas threw the ball toss up, wait for the kick to the backhand, turn it into a forehand, and rip. And if he did that enough times, if Casper got to do that enough times, he likely would have found a really good groove on the second return. But I think Tsitsipas saw, look, if he's going to stand back like that, there's way too much time for him to run around if I kick my serve towards his backhand. So I have to mix in the serve to his forehand. That way he can't do any guesswork beforehand. So when I go to the backhand, it actually gets there. He actually has to hit a backhand when I serve at it. That was really good by Tsitsipas. And he deserves credit there. Other than that, Ruud's second serve returning was awful. It was awful. He missed 36% of his second serve returns. That's a really high number. He was not finding Tsitsipas' backhand. This is another byproduct of the deep return position. You're trying to buy time, but the reward should be that you're hitting really good, high-quality balls. That's what the extra time is allowing you to do. So you can take a fuller swing, a bigger cut at the ball, generate more speed, more spin, hopefully more precision, and you make more. That wasn't happening. The forehand return was not only leaking errors, but there was also a depth problem and a precision problem. He just wasn't putting the ball deep into Tsitsipas's backhand side on a consistent basis off the forehand return. Off the backhand return, I don't think he missed as much. I don't think he put as many in the middle, but it's so slow that it takes too long to get into Tsitsipas's backhand corner. And what does Steph do? It again comes back to time. It's the same discussion. Tsitsipas has too much time to run around and hit a forehand. So it really looked to me like it didn't usually matter how good a backhand return Ruud would hit from the back fence. He just doesn't have the speed to really get it to Tsitsipas's backhand. So he's opening with the forehand. The deep second serve return position has worked for a lot of the best clay court players that we've seen in the modern era, I'll say. It's worked for Stan Wawrinka. It has worked for Dominic Thiem. And of course, it has worked for Rafael Nadal better than anybody else. What they do, this is not a complex thing. They rip the ball off of both wings. They move back, they buy themselves time, and they rip the ball off of both wings. Casper theoretically rips the ball off of his forehand side, can't do it off of his backhand. The other three can do that better. But just all in all, he's not as good at it. Casper is not as good at it, and it was just not there in this match. And then, of course, the other part of this, particularly in the second set, is Tsitsipas started serving volleying. Shocking success rate on this tactic. Stunning. Because he got predictable. He got very predictable, and he still kept on winning until eventually Casper, I can think of two times where he actually ended up hurting Tsitsipas by hitting damaging returns, a pass and a dipper that forced a floating half volley. I hate second serve serving volleys. Like, I usually can't stand them. I think unless your opponent is in utter shock by it and didn't expect it, it's usually a losing play because players return too well. Modern string technology and modern racket speed just make it too easy to dip the ball down low. And when you're serving volleying behind a second serve, I just think you're hitting volleys from under knee level way too often. But Tsitsipas just kept getting comfortable height volleys above hip level. And I couldn't believe it. Because they're handleable serves, relatively. There's no element of surprise. And it was stunning to me that Ruud couldn't get the returns to dip lower. All in all, that's what lost Casper the match. It was just Tsitsipas had a terrible serving day and Ruud couldn't do anything about it, because the quality on the return just wasn't there. Now, he did create openings. And for as good as Tsitsipas was from the back of the court, and I do think he was good, there were several service games where he made some pretty easy finishing errors that opened up opportunities for Casper. And Ruud had eight break points. There were eight chances that Ruud had to break Tsitsipas' serve. I think it's worth going through all eight because Tsitsipas saved all eight. So let's run through these quickly. Then in the end, I'll kind of summarize what my main takeaway is when you look at these eight break points. So three came in the first set. They were all at 2-1. The first one was a second serve, and Ruud hit a forehand return into the net. It's an awful return miss. When you think about it with Casper, he's got one of, if not the highest RPM forehand in the world. He's 15 feet behind the baseline. So if he hits the ball with 8 feet of net clearance, that thing is going to drop in. The net should not be in play there. That should be a high, heavy return with Rude's forehand, the way he generates all that topspin, and him being 15 feet behind the baseline, there should be 8 feet of net clearance. You shouldn't be messing with the net there. Second one, another second serve look. Rude hits a forehand return inside out that doesn't get to Tsitsipas's backhand. Tsitsipas hits a brilliant plus one forehand inside out that brushes off the baseline, gives him an attackable forehand on the next ball. He takes that inside in. He hits a couple of overheads to finish the point. Awesome plus one forehand by Tsitsipas. But when you look at it, it's a second serve by Steph, and Rude couldn't get the ball to Tsitsipas's backhand. Not because he hit a terrible return, but because he was way back in the court and he didn't hit a great return. So if you're up on the baseline and you hit like a decent ball towards the backhand, you might get Tsitsipas to hit one. But if you're on the back fence, you got to rip it, and it better be either deep or achieve some width. You get the point. The standards are higher because there's extra time for Tsitsipas to run around. Third one, Steph hit a service winner out wide on the ad side. This was a first serve that Tsitsipas made, but he missed the location. It was an easy return. Rude barely needed to move for his backhand return, but he mishit it wide. So those were the three in the first set. Return a serve. That's the big issue there. Second set at Laval, there was one. In this case, Tsitsipas hit a service winner. Fantastic serve there by Steph. No chance for Rude. He got his racket on it, but it was a brilliant serve by Tsitsipas. At one all, Rude had a break point. He had started to experiment with the closer in second serve position, actually faked standing in. Then when Tsitsipas threw the toss up, he moved back, ended up getting a forehand, rips the forehand return inside out. Thumbs up on the return. He made a good return. Tsitsipas hit this first ball backhand. Rude got a forehand to attack on the next ball. This is beautifully drawn up. This is exactly what Casper wants. He missed the forehand. He had a forehand on forced error long, trying to go inside in. Tactics were right there. Made a good return, missed the forehand. Three all, second set. This game is when Casper gets his final three break opportunities. First one, second serve look, makes another good return. Tsitsipas hits a backhand cross-court trade, really good quality. It was kind of right in the corner. Good depth, good width. Rude still tries to run around. Turns into an uncomfy, jammed run around. Doesn't get much on the ball. Weak ball. Tsitsipas hits a forehand inside out to build, forehand cross court to win and to finish. So offensive forehand combination by Tsitsipas. But what really won the point for Steph was the cross court backhand that turned into the jammed runaround by Rude. Next one, Tsitsipas made his first serve. Rude hit a backhand return that was extremely short, extremely soft. It did go to the Tsitsipas backhand, but Steph, to his credit, stepped in. Backhand down the line approach, backhand volley winner. All right. Good job by Tsitsipas there. I'm not too critical of Rude. He made the first serve return. He made it to Tsitsipas' backhand, and Steph just made a good play there. Although, obviously, the return could have been better. It was very short and very soft, as I mentioned. Add out. And it wasn't a great first serve either. Next one. Last one. Second serve, Tsitsipas, serve and volley, kick out wide. Rude takes it as a backhand, hits it hard down the line, but it's high. And this is the common theme. This was why Tsitsipas was winning so many serve and volley points with his second serve. It's just height of return by Rude. Height of return was not good. And this was one where, yeah, he hit it hard and Tsitsipas was stretched out on the forehand volley. So good job stretching him out, but when you don't make him hit up on the volley, when he gets to hit down on the volley, it's so much easier for Steph to stick that into the open court, and he did. He hit a winner on the forehand volley, didn't have to hit up on it, and there you have it, all 8 break points. So in summary, Tsitsipas hit one good first serve. Rude hit only two returns that got him into a rally. So only two times did Ruud get into a rally, and only one time did Tsitsipas hit a good first serve. That's crazy, right? Like, that is why I'm this is why I'm disappointed as a whole with what Ruud brought to the court. Now, Tsitsipas, some good plus ones, you know, a serve and volley that was well executed, a good volley on that eighth one, but like, how do you not make good enough returns to at least get into some rallies? And of course, Ruud couldn't win either of the rallies, that forehand unforced error and the jammed runaround that he got dictated off of. So those are your eight breakpoints. So thus far, I've only talked about Tsitsipas on serve and the second serve stuff mainly in the breakpoints. Let me get to when Casper was serving. How did Tsitsipas break Casper? I do want to shout out Tsitsipas's backhand. I thought it was really good in this match. And if you look at the first break of serve at 1-all, Tsitsipas hit three damaging backhands in that game. Two of them were deep down the middle. One of them was down the line. And then in the third set at 4-5, you had a backhand return deep middle into a Ruud forehand shank to start the game at 4-5, and this is the game that Ruud is going to get his serve broken to lose the match and to lose the championship. And then there are two other points here where they get into those extended baseline exchanges. Each player had to hit some backhands, and Ruud's two-hander faltered with a couple of unforced errors. Tsitsipas' one-hander stayed solid. So Tsitsipas protected the one-hander very well. I would say against Sinner, same thing. Like, maybe he came up with a couple of good highlight reel moments on the one-hander, but ultimately it comes down to, is the one-hander for Tsitsipas sabotaging his ability to do everything else that he does so well? Use his athleticism, use his transition game, and mainly use his forehand. So let's talk about the forehand. And that's what's always pretty fascinating about this matchup. It's two of the best forehands in the world, especially on clay. So as these two shared the court and I was watching this match, I wanted to pay attention and take note of whose forehand is more effective and why. And here's where I landed. Look, both are great. Tsitsipas's is more clinical. Steph, he takes time away. He puts it on a dime, meaning he's deadly accurate, and he comes forward. He's got the pace and spin of a big Western grip forehand like Ruud's, but he's got the precision of an Eastern grip forehand. One of those, you know, old school Eastern grip forehands that are so well suited, so well designed to step inside the court and to hit precise approach shots, which is something that Tsitsipas is able to do at a really high level. And, you know, Tennis Insights did send me some really good numbers on Tsitsipas's forehand. Look, what I love most about it is not how big he hits it, not how much spin he hits it with, although those things are high end. It's the placement. It's the way he spreads the court. It's how close he's able to play to the lines with consistency when he's in attacking positions. And this is one I love from Tennis Insights. If you split the court into thirds, you can see how well Tsitsipas keeps his forehand out of the middle third of the court. The tour average is 17% forehands middle of the court. Tsitsipas's average over the last year is 13%. His average here in Monte Carlo, 9%. So essentially, an incredibly low number by Tsitsipas of forehands that land in the middle third of the court. He moves the ball around. And by the way, he takes it early. It's a big deal. Obviously, he can back up, you know, defend on it, hit the high heavy ball. Of course, that's true. But when it's time for him to take charge, he can step inside the court, take time away, hit it as an approach shot. So it's such a dynamic forehand where Casper, he needs more time. His footwork is less aggressive. He's less precise. He doesn't come in behind it as naturally. And the strength for Ruud is probably, you know, I suppose he hits it a little bit heavier. But I don't think that makes up for all of the dynamic things that Tsitsipas does with his. There's one other thing that Tsitsipas was doing tactically that I want to talk about before we get into the Rude record in finals. Tsitsipas was not going to let Casper get comfortable trading and camping in the backhand side. So what Rude is going to often do is he's going to go into his backhand corner, hit a backhand trade cross court, and he's not going to recover all that hard to the middle because he wants to create as much space as possible to hit a forehand on the next ball. He doesn't want to create a lot of space on his backhand side. He'd much rather leave some space on his forehand side. What Tsitsipas did was, oh, I'm going to crush the ball into that space and put you on the run and put you on the defensive. So I saw so many times where Rude, even off of his forehand, if he was hitting a forehand inside out, Tsitsipas was actively thinking, can I run around this and hit an aggressive forehand inside in into that open deuce court? I'll threaten with the backhand down the line from time to time as well. Even when Casper was hitting his forehand inside in and his backhand down the line, Tsitsipas is coming back with what is the best running forehand cross court on clay, probably in all of men's tennis. So it was very difficult for Rude to go into his backhand corner and play from there because Tsitsipas was just finding opportunities to basically get him on his horse, scrambling into the deuce side, because anything less than exceptional when Casper was hitting out of that side of the court was being met with Tsitsipas aggression into the deuce. So that was super great from Steph. He did that incredibly well. That's all I got on the final. Let's zoom out. Let's talk a little bit about Casper. He is 0-7. Now in finals above the 250 level. Let's talk about that. He lost to Alcaraz in the Miami Open final. Nadal, Roland Garros. Alcaraz at the US Open. Djokovic at the Tour finals. That was all 2021. Last year, he lost Roland Garros final to Djokovic. This year, he's now lost in Acapulco to Dimonor, Monte Carlo to Tsitsipas. I'm not going to say it's bad luck who he's playing. And I was saying for a long time, look, let's not hammer home this stat for Rude when he's not expected to win any of these matches. I talked about that after he lost the Roland Garros final to Djokovic last year. But I'm also not going to say it's bad luck who he's playing. Because other than Acapulco, these are all Masters 1000s and above. You're going to play great guys in the final. Unless you're... It's lucky if it's the other way. But it's not unlucky when you play a great player in the final of a Masters 1000 or a Slam. It's just how it works. So of course you're playing top guys. Here's the disappointing thing about it. I thought he played the best big final of his career against Djokovic in Paris last year. Of the seven, it's really the only time that I didn't want more out of Casper's forehand. Meaning I felt that he took his best weapon, he backed it, he trusted it, he went after it, he freaking hit it. And in a lot of these other finals, I feel like sure, like maybe Casper's playing fine, but he's not playing big boy aggressive tennis with that forehand like he needs to, in my opinion, to just reach that elite level. He has since, after that Roland Garros final, lost four finals in a row, and he's 0-8 in sets. And by the way, in that 0-7, if you're going to levy a criticism about the results itself, the U.S. Open final against Alcaraz is the only of the seven where Casper Ruud has won a set. It's not great, and I do think, at least now I'm ready to say, and look, Acapulco against Demon, I kind of missed that one. That was my Vegas weekend where I was pretty busy that weekend traveling and watching Nadal Alcaraz at the Netflix Slam and all that. But this, to me, was easily his most disappointing performance in a big final, as long as you give him a pass for what he did against Nadal in that first RG final, where he was overwhelmed, a shell of himself. But I thought psychologically there was enough going on there where you could understand why Ruud couldn't bring his best. It's hard for me to really understand this one, but I do think it's possible that the finals thing is in his head, because he came out too passive on the forehand, a little shaky on the forehand, and then, you know, you see some of the returning stuff on the break points, and he goes 0 for 8, and it's just like he just wasn't able to bring it today in a way that was certainly disappointing. So this, to me, was the worst one of the seven. He's having a good year. He's made three finals. His win-loss record is excellent. But, you know, certainly the more times this happens, the more you get concerned about scar tissue, the more you get concerned that he's going to get discouraged at a larger level, you know, in the bigger picture. So I think even if he puts in a good performance in one of these finals, like if he played one of these guys tight, that would be a different story, but he's not, right? Last thing I want to talk about is going back to the semis where Tsitsipas beat Jannik Sinner, and you have a little bit of controversy with the line call at 3-1, Tsitsipas serving down 1-3, break point for Sinner. And I want to talk about this, and I hope that anyone who initially gets upset at my premise hears me out. You have to be okay with an uncomfortable truth here when it comes to this tournament and that result. Like, to me, you just have to be okay with it. You have to be able to make peace with the idea that the lines judge may have determined, and the chair umpire who didn't overrule, and Sinner's failure to stop the point, like that point may have decided the outcome of that match easily. And it was a mistake. No two ways about it. It stinks that that happened. Under no circumstance should it not have been 4-1, double break, Jannik Sinner up. Now, this is not an abnormal thing in sports. Officiating matters in sports. Officiating swings outcomes in sports. When I say outcomes, I don't mean even the overall outcome, because usually we can't actually even tell whether or not it swung the overall outcome, which is true in this case, because let's say it's 4-1, we still don't know what would have happened. But as far as that particular point, that particular game, since it was a break point, we know it swung the outcome. And it was not a judgment call. It was objectively wrong, way outside the margin of error of Hawkeye. And by the way, if you missed it, Tsitsipas, double fault. But they played out the point, and Tsitsipas won the point. And then after the point, Sinner was like, whoa, that serve was out. And Hawkeye confirmed it was way out. Yes, Jannik could have stopped the point. I think we all understand that. So this is all to say, it's normal in other sports. We really aren't used to it in tennis because it's genuinely rare. It's genuinely rare in tennis that we can look at such a big point that clearly 100% beyond a shadow of a doubt should have gone one way, and because of a missed, because of an officiating mistake, went the other way. This is going to be eradicated in 2025. Electronic line calling across the board, where there still might be some judgment calls, and we're going to talk about judgment calls in a moment. But as far as like egregious line call errors, they're not going to really happen anymore unless systems malfunction. So that's my thought on what happened with Sinner there, that it stinks, that you got to be comfortable with the idea that, yeah, could have decided the match right there. We'll never know what would have ultimately happened, but it definitely should have been 4-1, double break, Sinner. Period. It should have been. There's no debate. Now, what I saw was a lot of people saying, well, what about what happened at Tsitsipas? What about what happened at Tsitsipas in the first game of the third set? Massive false equivalency. Massive. I'm sorry. And that was a bad call as well. That point should have been replayed. The out call came basically simultaneously with Tsitsipas missing a backhand slice. And when the shot and the call come simultaneously, there's really no telling if the call affected the shot. I even think it looked like it did. Regardless, if the call comes at the same time as the shot, the point needs to be replayed. That was a mistake. Tsitsipas was wronged. No doubt about it. But the decision was wrong. The decision should have been replay the point. But here's why it's completely different. Let's run through the scenarios here. If everything went well, if everything went how it should have been, that ball should not have been called out. And Tsitsipas is hitting a backhand slice, pulled outside the single sideline. He's in a bad position. So I'll be generous here. Generous. And I'll say that there's 65% chance Sinner wins the point. Might have been higher, but I'll be generous. So I'll say 65% chance Sinner wins the point if the lines umpire doesn't make a mistake. Now, the point should have been replayed. First serve Tsitsipas. Let's say, I don't know, still 30% chance Sinner wins the point. We'll give Tsitsipas 70% chance that he wins the point. So what ended up happening was Sinner was awarded the point. He got the point. Again, bad call, but that's very different from a double fault in which in all scenarios, 100% of scenarios, Sinner won that point. You see how it's different? Because with the Tsitsipas thing, well, Sinner was in good position to win that point, so it would have been bad luck for Sinner already, even if they replay the point. Then even if they did replay the point, you don't know who would have won the point. So it's just a different thing. It's not as bad. It's still a tough pill to swallow for Tsitsipas there. It was also 15 all, first game of the first set. It ended up being a break of serve for Sinner, but it's a little bit different. Both things were unfortunate. One was far more unjust than the other. Don't make false equivalencies. Be able to differentiate. You know, because it's not the same. Both can be bad, but both are not the same. Tsitsipas played really well in that match against Sinner. He got the benefit of Yannick wearing down physically. I don't know how much of it was wear and tear, how much of it was like, you know, acute injury. It was hard to tell, but it kind of seemed more like wear and tear because there were moments in that match where I saw him grabbing his hip, and then I saw him grabbing his quad, and then I saw him grabbing his hamstring. So it's like, okay, it seems like everything hurts. And Sinner's played a lot of tennis. And it was physical. And that's part of the game. As I always say, that's part of the game. And it's a huge win for Tsitsipas there against Yannick. It was well-deserved. Look, throughout Monte Carlo, I don't think anybody played better tennis consistently than Stefanos Tsitsipas. Huge win for him. So really resets the clay court season a little bit because I think it's fair to say that he's going to be a factor. Hope you enjoyed. Don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you next time.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.